Al Jazeera Podcasts.
How can we reduce food insecurity? A report by 16 agencies finds the lives of nearly 300 million people globally are in danger, and that spreading conflict rather than climate change is the biggest cause. Has enough been done to address the crisis? I'm Mohammed Jamjoum, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. So, what are the deeper implications of the report's findings? It's a good question for our guests. In Johannesburg, Alex Duvall is the author of Mass Starvation, The History and Future of Famine. He's also the executive director of the World Peace Foundation at Tufts University in Boston in the U.S. In Dakar, Mamadou Goïta is a member of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, a global think tank that provides policy recommendations and advocates for sustainable and equitable food systems worldwide. And in Kuala Lumpur, Dr. Jamila Mahmoud is executive director of the Sunway Center for Planetary Health at Sunway University. She's worked at the interface of public health, climate change, and humanitarianism with the International Red Cross and the UN. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Jamila, let me start with you today. This global report on food crises says food insecurity around the world has worsened for the fifth consecutive year. For those attempting to end hunger around the world, how enormous has the challenge become?
Thank you very much. I think that, you know, the figures are alarming. 5 years in a row, and we're talking now about 281.6 million people facing very severe or high levels of acute food crisis is something that the entire world should wake up to and be very, very alarmed. The numbers are not likely to fall drastically. And we're seeing now, you know, a compounding layers of crisis that are leading to this situation right now.
Alex, you just heard Jamila mention one of the numbers cited in that report, which is that nearly 282 million people's lives are in danger because they don't have enough to eat. Now, you wrote a piece recently with this headline. It says, "I said the era of famines might be ending. I was wrong." What did you elaborate upon in that piece, and why do you think you were wrong?
So until about 6 or 7 years ago, there was a year-on-year decrease in two things. One is the level of chronic malnutrition and hunger worldwide, so that the prospect was real that zero hunger could be achieved within our lifetimes. And the other thing was that famines, those terrible outbreaks of acute starvation in which large numbers of people perish, those had been all but abolished. And very tragically, we've seen those make a comeback. And the reason why famines are making a comeback is entirely political. It's all to do with the use of starvation as a weapon of war.
Mamadou, how much of a crisis are food systems around the world facing right now? And how much have changes to global food systems in recent decades contributed to all of this?
Thanks. I think that, you know, the figure that you have been just repeating again are very worrying, and it's a wake-up call. And then a wake-up call, but if we have been saying for a long time that this is a very turning point, and we call for action that we have been blowing for a long time has not been really heard. And because if you look at for the last 15 years, three main crises that have been added to the climate discussion that we are having for a long time. So we had the food crisis with all the consequences that we have been facing. We had the COVID-19 crisis and the war between Ukraine and Russia. That has been also exacerbating in what we are facing actually. So we have been the growing over the last 10 years of this decade of food insecurity is due to a certain number of structural issues that really need to address. And it's a political issue that has been said by previous speaker, saying that it's a political issue, because if you look at the trends and what is going on actually, there is a room for really creating conditions for food security in the world.
Jamila, I saw you nodding along to some of what Mamadou was saying there. It looked like you wanted to jump in and add to the point he was making, so please go ahead.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Mamadou's point on being a political issue, we know that the current situation of food insecurity is also, you know, conflict in many cases is really a proxy for climate-related food security challenges, especially in the Sahel, Somalia, and of course in places like Gaza. I think that, you know, the people that are displaced here on end by the climate crisis and then compounded, as I mentioned before, by conflict, it's just going to make things much worse. And what was said by Alex earlier, that we're talking about famine. You know, we would never imagine in this day and age we would still be talking about people literally on the brink of starvation and, you know, without any political will to allow food to get to them. Now, we are not short of food globally. We have enough to feed everyone, but the barriers are mainly political.
Jamila, let me also ask you about the fact that within this report, obviously, conflict is cited as one of the main drivers when it comes to food insecurity right now. But I also want to touch more specifically upon climate change and ask you how much climate change has been responsible for pushing global hunger to these alarming levels.
Climate change, you know, I look at the three C's: conflict, climate, and the third one is cash, right? Basically, cost of living, anything related to whether it's household debt or national debt. So these things play, you know, a major role, and they interact with each other. Where climate change, we know that we're not going to be living with 1.5. The target now is going to be likely to reach 2.7. Now, we know with 2 degrees, the compounding impact of 2 degrees centigrade is going to be devastating on food systems. And unfortunately, it's those countries that are facing conflict that are also facing the climate crisis, and particularly when we're talking about sub-Saharan Africa, the Sahel, and so forth. So I think, you know, it's just going to get worse until we actually do something about it. And as I mentioned earlier, it's not a shortage of food or a shortage of money globally. How do we now, you know, compensate and help countries that are facing climate change and serious implications to food security to get out of debt? Surely these countries, which are normally the ones who contribute so little to global warming and carbon emissions, they need to be compensated in some way and supported.
So, Alex, I saw you reacting to what Jamila was saying there. I want to pick up on the point that she was making when it comes to how do you ensure that these countries that need the aid the most actually get it? And also, obviously, we know that the emergency is getting worse when it comes to food insecurity. This is no surprise. We've known this for quite some time. But where do things stand when it comes to fundraising to address these crises? And are these aid budgets that are being given by donor countries enough?
I think we need to distinguish between two very important things that intersect but are actually quite different. One is the structural crisis of food production, farming systems, and the general access to food by populations in most countries. And Jamila has described that predicament extremely well. And that demands an enormous financial and political effort, not only to provide funds, but to provide reform, reform of the global economic system. The other thing, which is, as it were, the sharp end, which is something that is the most sensitive to talk about, is that where we see actual famine, it's not just because things are getting worse, it's because there is decision, deliberately or with reckless disregard for human life, to wage war in such a way that people starve. And there's absolutely no reason why children should be starving in Gaza, apart from the political military decision of Israel. Similarly, in Ethiopia, we have seen something similar unfolding, a country that is quite capable of feeding itself, and yet the authorities have decided that starvation will be their weapon. And again, something similar in Syria, in Sudan. And that is the most sensitive and difficult thing to address in the international political arena, because frankly, it requires calling out leaders, men, for making famine, for man-made famine, which in my view is a crime.
Alex, let me just follow up with you on one of the points you were making. I mean, one of the things that's cited in this report is that 700,000 people in five countries or territories were on the brink of famine last year, almost all of them in Gaza. You were talking about Gaza just a moment ago. The Strip's entire population of 2.3 million is classified as food insecure, meaning they regularly don't have enough to eat. How much of a moral failure is this?
Well, first of all, I have to say those figures are being exceeded day by day. It's the nature of a report such as this that the figures are, and the report takes some while to be processed and published, and they're outdated in a couple of respects. First of all, we have never in the last 75 years seen such a rapid increase in rates of severe acute malnutrition and people facing famine as we are seeing today in Gaza. So the numbers are going up every day. The numbers in the report for Sudan are also sadly out of date. The numbers, we're going to see very major starvation unfolding in Sudan and possibly, quite possibly in parts of Ethiopia too, even while international aid budgets are being cut, the World Food Programme, which may not be the ideal system for responding to these emergencies, but it's the only one that we have, has had to lay off in many places 30% of its staff. So just at the time when these needs are going up, the political will to stop the starvation seems to be evaporating, and the money to feed the starving seems to be draining away as well.
Mamadou, from your perspective, what should be most worrying to the global public right now? And also, I want to ask you, is the international community as concerned as it should be, as it is faced with this increasingly dire situation?
Yeah, the international, there are many things that people are saying, but the concern is not there. Because the immediate risk that we have, it has been said, is the escalating conflict in all these areas that have been mentioned, in Gaza, in Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, and elsewhere in the Sahel countries also. Because hunger is a consequence of violence, particularly concerning the increasing weaponization of food supply that we have actually. Food cannot and must not be a weapon for war, but this is what we are facing actually. So there is a kind of disrespect of human rights with all the violation of international laws related to this weaponization of food supplies. But nobody is just, you know, trying to get out of it. Food system is catastrophically vulnerable to shocks and disruption that we can see actually. So if we want to talk about solutions, you know, the first thing is just to look at what international the instrument are just trying to put on light should be really respected, and then creating conditions for this. It has been said, it's not a shortage of food, first. It's not the fact that people, even if there is some of the structural issues that we have been mentioning, so there is room actually to bridge the gaps that exist in these different countries where you have violence actually taking place. So when we want to talk about solution, I think there is a need for new research for addressing hunger. We have been saying that for years, that there is a need for new research. And instead of relying on a volatile global market to feed people, we need to rebuild countries' capacity to produce nutritious food for their own people. This is very important. And if you look at the trend, actually, it's not something that is being done. We also need more diverse and resilient food system to better withstand shocks, because we just realized that, you know, the system that you have is completely hijacked or disrupted to some extent by also some of the shocks that are created, you know, by human actions in when we have. But also, we need a debt relief for poorest countries. So, there is no way to get out of this situation of hunger that we have. Really, we didn't learn from, you know, some of the experiences.
Mamadou, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me go to Jamila, because I see her reacting to some of what you're saying. It looks like she wants to add to the point you are making. Go ahead, Jamila.
No, Mamadou points to, you know, the issue around global governance. And, you know, we know that the situation, if I take the situation in Gaza, which is acute malnutrition, is simply barbaric. And, you know, you're talking about 1.1 million people displaced with nowhere to go. They have no choice. They can't even leave to find food. And then, you know, a quarter of the population of Gaza now facing a catastrophe. I mean, a phase five malnutrition, and that's the worst phase. And yet we have instruments. We have the UN Security Council. We have the Geneva Conventions. We have the rights, you know, and the Convention relative to protection of civilians in situations of war. We have, you know, Article 54, 55, the need to protect health facilities and to provide people food and not allow them to starve. Yet, there is no political will to allow people who are starving to be fed when food is waiting at their doorstep. Now, tell me, what are we going to do about this? This is going to trigger a series of cascading events, anger around the world. And we're talking about human security in Gaza, which is going to affect human security globally.
Alex, I want to pick up on what Jamila was just saying there. She was talking about the issue of security and how it impacts the world when it comes to these issues. You wrote recently also, when hunger combines with war, that vortex of instability spins faster. Hunger on the scale that we're witnessing, I mean, this can really be a severe threat to global security, right?
I completely agree. I mean, one of the unwritten histories, if you like, of the 20th century is the degree to which food crises and fear of food crises were absolutely pivotal in driving the key wars that happened, including World War II. I mean, one of the lessons that was learned by the Germans after World War I, when they felt that they had been starved into surrender, was that they needed to secure what was necessary to sustain their population for a new war. And on the Eastern Front, they launched what was called the Hunger Plan, the idea that they would starve the populations of Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union in order for them to acquire that food. And the Americans in the last phase of the war launched what they explicitly called Operation Starvation against the Japanese mainland, a siege. And yet all of this seems to have been forgotten, the way in which war and hunger came together in this terrible spiral. And I think at a time when there are cries, we must have never again for genocide. We must also remember, we must have never again for mass starvation on that scale. The two are linked.
Mamadou, you've spoken about how food systems are in need of transformation. How much would things be improved if there were enough investment in, say, agriculture or local farming initiatives?
Yeah, we know that actually access to, in some of the structural issues that we have been talking about here, is the issue of investment in agriculture should go to the where majority of population, in the case of Africa, are producing. These are family farming system. Because if you look at the trend or the statistic, will show you that more than 73% of the food that is provided in these most of these countries are provided by a family farming system. So the investment should go in not only in access to some of the factor of production, stabilizing the land issue in some cases, but also the access to seed. So the pharmacy system, linked to the agroecological perspective that we have actually, is the solution that we have in hand. It will not only territorialize the food system, taking into account the specificities of different countries, different regions, and different parts of the world, but also creating condition. So what we have been appealing for a long time, just to avoid, to predict some of the events that are coming to have a food reserve that are territorialized first, and secondly, they can be regional, as we have in West Africa, for instance. The food reserves should be also invested, just not only to keep the food on the continent, but also create conditions for accessing to it in a market that is not distorted. because the international is not providing food for people, and the territorial markets, those who have been used, you know, for a long time just to make these linkages between the food production system or food consumption system and the wealth creation and job creation via territorial market. So we need to change, you know, all this perception, the paradigm of looking at the food system as something that should be as a commodity, food as a commodity, but food as a human right, a thing that needs also to be considered in a territorial way in terms of diversity, but also in terms of complementarity between different territories.
Jamila, Mamadou was just talking about food as a human right. I want to talk about another aspect to all this and ask you, from your perspective, how big of a problem right now is food waste in the world? And how can that be addressed properly?
I'm really glad you asked me this, because here's the paradox. On one hand, you have people starving and people not having access to food. On the other hand, we have a serious food waste problem. We're talking about 38-40% of food in developed countries actually being wasted. In the US alone, it's estimated it can feed more than 480 billion meals in a year. This is how much. And it's not just about food that's wasted. It's also about it sitting in landfills and producing greenhouse gases. So again, you know, you have the situation of waste, which is also going to impact climate change and global warming. So, you know, how do we reconcile this? How do we make sure that we look at consumption in a way that is equitable as well? So it boils down again to looking at equity and fairness, and how do we support those countries which are the lowest emitters facing the greatest challenges versus those who have so much and hold the wealth of the world. How do you find the balance now? How do we find that compensatory mechanism, which is all about, you know, equity and social justice? The other point that perhaps is sometimes not talked about enough is not just about the equity in terms of access to food, but also nutrition. In those countries that have chronic, you know, year-on-year problems with, you know, food crises, you're also talking about nutritional crises. So, and that has a long-term impact, particularly on those who are most vulnerable, young people and children, because there'll be a cognitive impact and so on and so forth. So ultimately, these are about people, and they are usually the ones who are women, who are children, who are probably disabled and have no access to food markets. And I think, you know, we just create these serious conditions for people who should have every right to food.
Alex, you heard Jamila there talk about the fact that, you know, people need to have the right to access food. She said that equity is needed, social justice is needed, you know, in order to find that balance so that the countries that need it most get the kinds of help that they need so that their populations can be fed. I mean, what do you think? How does the world start going about this in a more equitable way, in a way that solutions can actually be found?
I think Jamila absolutely summed it up perfectly. And if I may add, there's one additional element here, which is that the way in which agriculture and the food system has become industrialized and is being run by giant agro corporations to squeeze every possible piece of profit is not only environmentally disastrous, cutting down rainforests, destroying the environment, generating greenhouse gases, but is also producing food that is not nutritious and is causing an epidemic of obesity, which is another nutritional crisis in its own right. Obese people are overnourished and undernourished at the same time. And that is not just in developed countries. Here in South Africa, where I am at the moment, it's a country that moved from a crisis of undernutrition to a crisis of obesity without going through the sort of one would hope would be the healthy stage in between. And I think this points to the way in which the entire global food system is so dysfunctional. It's producing too much, and it's not producing what we need. It needs desperately to be reformed.
Mamadou, we only have a couple of minutes left. I could see you reacting to what Alex was saying there, so I'll give you a chance to jump in. But I also just want to ask you simply, do you believe, from your perspective, does the political willpower exist right now to try and actually put an end to hunger?
I think we don't have any choice again, because if you look at things, actually, there is a lot that is being done in some part of the world, actually, just to try to change. The social movement are pushing also government to change the policies. You look at West Africa, they're bringing ECOWAS, for instance, to just to push all the countries to work on a transition, on a ecological, agroecological transition strategy, or even policies in these countries, is something that is a good progress per se. And saying that we need really to secure populations, and then using the social schemes that are very important for those who have been giving these issues, and secondly, to create conditions for reorganizing the market system around the food market are very important. And if you look at what has been said, I think it's very, very important, actually, just to create conditions for this movement that are created, and that will create more balanced things. Now, the issue of debt is very important, but we need to look at the food system as upstream and downstream, and then just to say that it's a whole. If there is a distortion at the production side, as it has been said, because the food that we are eating is of very bad quality, you can find in not in Africa, but elsewhere, food is produced enough, but what people are eating is completely disturbing, and they have issues in the world. So there is a need to consider that food is for that, and then we need to link them up.
I'm sorry to have interrupted you, but we are out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Alex Duvall, Mamadou Goïta, and Jamila Mahmoud. This episode was produced by Mohamed Al-Aishi, Axel Zayimovich, Veronica Petrosa, and Gemma Harris. Studio sound was by Alvaro Galan Madrid. The program was edited by Ahmed Itfaga, Lynn Nguyen, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. Tune in on Thursday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, why do pro-Palestinian voices on U.S. college campuses feel they're being silenced? That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.